everything you do should really be aligned and harmonized with your culture, because people are watching. And if you don't do that, then it becomes like the cliche of culture and mission and values, which is the corny part of it, right? Where people will say, well, I saw a sign in a conference room and that's what culture, you know, that's what it is. And that's not what it is. It needs to really be a living, breathing entity.
Welcome to the IDOU Creative Confidence Podcast, a series focused on building your confidence at work to tackle your biggest creative challenges.
Join us as we learn insights and lessons straight from IDEO and today's most impact-oriented design thinking leaders.
Hi, I'm Suzanne Gibbs Howard.
And I'm Kalita Stafford.
Welcome to the Creative Confidence Series. I'm Suzanne Gibbs Howard, founder and dean of IDOU. I help create this series to enable people all around the world to grow more creative confidence in the modern ways we all work. We always host conversations with special guests on creativity, leadership, innovation, and growth. And we dig deep in those conversations to give you real stories, tips, and tricks so that you can practice these things in your own world. And at the end, we always take questions from our community. Most recently, I spoke with Margot Downs. Margot is the former chief people officer at Stitch Fix, which is a fascinating fast-growth startup here in Silicon Valley. She's also done a lot of work leading talent in recruiting, retention, learning and development, and growth in multiple really intriguing organizations, each with very distinctive cultures. She's worked at Starbucks, Lululemon, and The Body Shop. And she helped each of these organizations use their culture to increase their value while simultaneously making them better places to work. Today, Margot is focusing on turning the soft and fuzzy things about corporate culture into something that can be operationalized for scale. She helps us here at IDEO and across many other companies around the globe. And she's an expert on thinking about how to be an authentic person in the workplace and how to allow more people to bring their true selves to work. In today's conversation, you'll learn how to operationalize culture for scale, how authenticity plays an important role in almost every culture, and you'll learn ways that you can take accountability for culture even if you're not the person who's officially in charge of it. So we started the conversation by defining who owns culture in an organization. Here's what Margot had to say.
When I was actually transitioning from Lululemon to work in Silicon Valley, I interviewed with a few companies who would say, like, you need to come in and figure out the culture. You need to fix the culture. And for me, I think that it's much more broad than that. Like, HR absolutely plays a very strategic role in really working with the leadership team, or if it's a founder or the people in the company, to really identify what the culture is and what the correct people strategies are. But I think that the culture lives through every single person in the company. And if you're really thinking about scaling, which I know is on a lot of people's mind, or even just continuing to get better, you have got to place it in the hands of the people. It's every day, every decision that people make in terms of how they interact is what really creates the culture. And I learned this from a really smart person a long time ago, which is kind of thinking about your role in the culture is either, are you a generator of the culture or are you a consumer? And so the consumer would be more like, you need to do this for me. It's, you know, a little bit less responsibility, whereas a person who sees himself is like, I create the culture and not waiting for someone else to do that.
And Margot shared how culture is different at every organization, yet there are three building blocks that should be present in every organization, no matter what kind. Listen in.
I've been a part of some amazing companies that had very different cultures. And I think I realized, you know, very early on in my own training and experience that, you know, the culture really needs to be harmonized with what your business goals are. And there's no one right way. Now, we've seen, you know, toxic cultures, and there are definitely some things that are, you know, we want to avoid. But I think it's super important to really consult what's authentic for your culture and really to kind of dig into what is correct for your culture. And don't be afraid to actually really create that. And so the way I look at it and kind of have started to formulate is I think the first thing is actually having a vision for people. So, you know, as you have a vision for your product, as you have a vision for your service, whatever it is, your brand, what's your vision for people? Like, what do you want people to say about your company while they're there? What's the experience you want them to be having while they're there? And even after they leave, what do you want them to be saying about it? I would say at Stitch Fix, like we used to talk about that a lot because we have a lot of stylists that are part-time employees and people will move on to other things, which we actually really wanted them to do. Mm-hmm. And so like, what would you want somebody to do is you would want somebody to look back on that and say like, this was like a pinnacle experience mm-hmm. or this was, you know, at Starbucks, we used to talk about being a store manager and saying it was like getting an MBA. Because you would learn how to run a business, even similarly to that at Lululemon, is that, you know, what was the thing that you would want people to be able to take away and be able to give back in the world? And I happen to personally think that there's so much at work that we learn that we bring out to the other aspects of our lives and pay forward in the future. So then the second thing is the authenticity piece, which is it has to be true for you. And I think in the HR space in particular, and maybe it's true in marketing and finance and other places, but I think a lot of people want to lift and shift. My friend Patty works at, you know, Patty McCord is very famous at Netflix for the Culture Deck, and she's amazing and they've done amazing work. But even Patty would say it doesn't work everywhere. It's not necessarily like, oh, we're going to apply all these principles because it may be at odds with what your company is doing or what your brand strategy is. And then finally, for me, the other piece of it is consistency. And so I think that's where, look, and this is not, when I'm saying this, this is like in a perfect world. So there are going to be massive inconsistencies in companies. People are going to act in a way that isn't in accordance with the culture. Or, you know, you may run into a policy or a program that doesn't feel like it actually sets up or syncs up with your culture. And that's the work. Everything you do should really be aligned and harmonized with your culture because people are watching. And yeah. if you don't do that, then it becomes like the cliche of culture and mission and values, which is the corny part of it, right? Where people will say, well, I saw a sign in a conference room and that's what culture, you know, that's what it is. And that's not what it is. It needs to really be a living, breathing entity.
There are many misconceptions around what culture means and how to go about strategically building it. But Margo shared some mistakes that she sees often and how to approach them differently. Again, here's Margo.
One that I see a lot, especially as I've been starting to work with companies that are more at an early stage, is like the culture will take care of itself. And the truth of it is that it will. And you may end up with a culture at some point that isn't really what you want. Look, you know, cultures are everywhere. Our families are cultures. Our friend groups are cultures. So something's happening in the workplace. And the culture in the workplace is really how people are going to agree to interact with each other. So I think that's a common one. I think the other one that I see more recently is that culture equals perks. Culture is like, what's our happy hour like? How many kombuchas are in the fridge? I think that's a common misconception. The other one that comes up for me a lot is I think this kind of employer of choice, which is a very popular phrase, and people thinking that you need to be all things to all people. And what I've come to learn is I think to a certain extent, you don't want to have toxic, you know, non-inclusive cultures. You want to be able to attract great people, diverse people, but not every company is for every person. There's something to be said for being able to be explicit with people so that they understand that, like, look, this is going to be great for me, or this isn't a place that I actually want to work. I'll say Stitch Fix as a great example. So at Stitch Fix, partnership is a really strong value. And so, you know, we have a lot of collaboration across groups. We try to avoid, you know, or I should say we, not anymore, but they, Stitch Fix, would really try to foster that collaboration because really believing that we're better together. So that means engineering working with styling. That means merchandising working with data science. If you're a person who maybe came from a company where there was one function that was kind of reigned supreme, you come from a company that maybe engineers like made all of the decisions. I'm not saying that's wrong, but in our company, that just definitely was not the way to go. And so we would be pretty explicit about that. You know, but I think during the interview process and even when you're actually, you know, doing your employment branding, you want to let people know so they could opt out because there's no reason people should be unhappy. We spend a lot of our time at work and we should be able to be in places where we feel fulfilled and happy. I think the term culture fit, you know, and I've thought about this a lot, I think is a really, it can be a very negative and very narrowing thing. Mm-hmm. And so what you're really looking is like, what's the kind of alignment that needs to be there so that people can bring that full expression and the diversity of who they are to the table.
Margot believes authenticity is absolutely critical to building a thriving culture. Keeping humans at the center of your culture efforts is something that every organization needs to do.
For me, that goes even beyond work. I think it goes into life. I mean, I think that's really, and not to wax philosophical, but I feel really strongly that, look, you know, that's the journey that we're on, is I think as humans, is to be able to really share and fully express the gifts confidently that we came here with. And I think that sometimes in the workplace, we forget humanity. We forget that we're dealing with human beings, and we forget that they're bringing all of that messiness and that beauty to the table. And so why authenticity? Because look, I can think of times in my career, good people, good places, where I was coached to conform. You know, it was too much of this or too much of that. And look, some of that was very, very helpful. I'm not going to lie to you, but some of it was quite stifling. And I found myself really feeling so much pressure to conform that I don't know that I always was at my highest peak performance. I have to be this, or I have to say that. And I think when people are so dominated by that, I think innovation dies, you know, and it's not always easy to be able to create the environment where people can be fully expressed, and what's fully expressed, and then what's not good about that, and really being able to navigate that. But I think it's really, really important. I think it's very healthy. Mm-hmm. And I think in companies that really want to be innovative, it's essential. I know for me, especially working at Stitch Fix, I'd never worked with a data scientist in my life. And so I didn't know what was that going to be like. And to meet people who had that discipline and who had that study, who were incredibly creative and had a mind that worked differently than mine, I found it to be incredibly, like just for myself, very, very enhancing, and helped me to be a better partner, a better leader, but more creative as well.
At Stitch Fix, Margot worked to create a cultural operating system, or an OS, to frame up what it meant to work there and to create a framework for culture that could scale. And so she walked us through the elements of this framework and how you can apply it to your own culture.
I'm a big believer in frameworks. So I also am a big believer in giving people tangible things to be able to use. And so while I'm saying that, look, every culture is unique, I think what's not unique is that a framework is essential. And I think especially if you're scaling, a framework is essential because people want to know the parameters of the culture. And so, you know, at Stitch Fix, it wasn't like day one we created the OS. It was a process. And so when I came to Stitch Fix already had a working set of values and really had some of those things in place. So a lot of it was really excavating and codifying. And so that would be how I would describe. And that was through talking to people. It was through meeting with the leadership team. It was through saying, like, what behaviors would people be practicing if no one was watching them? And that becomes the thing that really is the values and the culture. And so it's really about
like a distillation.
It's a distillation. You know, you talk about being like a cultural anthropologist. It's like you're on an archaeological dig because it's all there. You know, it's in someone's mind. It's in the DNA of the company. And so at Stitch Fix, what we ultimately ended up creating was just this framework that we call the OS, which is the operating system. And it was really comprised of three things. So the first one was really just, what do we hire for? So what's the standard? And at Stitch Fix, it was about people who are bright, kind, and motivated by challenge. So that was kind of step one. And that was just bare minimum. That was kind of like the admission ticket to even get into the company. And all of our recruiting and our branding was really reflective of those particular traits. So you want to really be looking for people who have that ability and that flexibility to work with ambiguity and change and really find that to be invigorating and not draining, you know, and it's good. This is where it just comes back into knowing yourself and what do you really want? And then the second thing was really, what was the practice? And that was really the Stitch Fix values. And so I talked a little bit about that already with partnership, integrity, authenticity, innovation, and responsibility. What was interesting at Stitch Fix is we actually added authenticity only like I think within the last year. And so it was kind of interesting because that was like a really big deal to add a new value. And, you know, there was a lot of hot discussion, spicy discussion, and it was kind of polarizing. And so being able to say, no, this is really important to put that in there. And the reason why we actually did was because we realized we were evaluating people on authenticity, but we weren't being transparent about it. So it was actually a really essential way that the company actually operated, but it was never actually brought to the surface. And so that's an interesting one of kind of how do you actually evolve and change? Because people will say, well, does the culture change? change. I don't know how often the culture should change, but you should always be revisiting for relevance. I think what we were, you know, kind of seeing is that that was an area where people maybe weren't being as successful because we weren't that explicit about it. So I think that those are some really good things to revisit. And then this was came later was really about leadership. And we had to really think about, again, going authentically, what does leadership mean at that particular company? So what did leadership mean at Stitch Fix, which is different than it meant at Lululemon, different than what leadership meant at Starbucks. And so we actually went out and talked to people in the company and said, like, tell us like what a leader looks like, what are they doing? And that can also sound like it's a catchphrase, which is like everyone's a leader, but it was actually really true what we heard from people, because there's a lot of cross-functionality, which I mentioned earlier, in a company that's based on, you know, value as partnership. And so you've got people leading projects and, you know, what does self-leadership look like? And that was a lot of what the examples were that people gave. Oh, Sharon was on this project and that was amazing. And when that person stepped up and actually gave feedback, and so kind of getting to feedback, which is the essential piece. I think what's interesting about the Stitch Fix OS and then the feedback component is that actually is the engine of the culture. And so how do you actually bring this to life was what we realized was actually through feedback. And again, what's very interesting about the Stitch Fix OS is that if you know the Stitch Fix business, which is predicated on using data and humans to be able to identify the best clothing and accessories for people, feedback in that loop was essential both to the client and to people internally in the company. There needs to be harmony between your internal and your external brand. I don't think your employment brand is exactly the same as your consumer brand, but I actually think there needs to be harmonization and alignment. And there can be conflict there too.
We spoke about how metrics came into play as Margo was building the culture at Stitch Fix.
They came later. And so we always did, you know, an employee survey and actually used that as a metric. So we actually used a survey tool called Tiny Pulse and then transitioned off of that within the last year. I think, you know, I would be really transparent to say at the beginning, we weren't hardcore. And, you know, we just didn't have anything. Like when I started at Stitch Fix, there were 50 people. There were three people on the people and culture team. And basically we were focused on getting people paid. And so we weren't sort of like, what are we measuring? And then over time, as we were able to implement systems, we looked at things like turnover. We looked at, you know, our engagement metrics and all of those kind of things as KPIs to understand how people were doing, you know, how things were happening in the company.
Wonderful.
We were rigorous about doing feedback, you know, at different points of the process. So being able to get feedback from the employee, but also get feedback, you know, people collecting feedback so that people themselves could actually self-regulate. So we would do a process at Stitch Fix that was called Collect and Reflect that was actually about going and face-to-face getting feedback from people and doing that on a regular basis. So I think that's one thing, you know, but I also think you're starting to look at your, you'll break down your retention metrics and start to look at when are you losing people. So if you start to see that you're losing people like very, very early on, you're sort of looking at that and going, okay, we've got an issue in terms of hiring and like, let's dig into that. Or we've got an issue with onboarding. I think those to me are some obvious places to start to look. If you start noticing your turnover in terms of your tenure is at a different point, like maybe it's people at 2 years when you're kind of looking in a certain function and going, wow, we're losing a lot of people at 2 years, or we're losing a lot of managers. You know, what's happening there? It's probably like, okay, what's the career development? Is the company at a stage now where this isn't compelling for this person, which could be okay. You know, I think those are some things that are actually going to happen naturally. I am not necessarily a huge proponent of people have to stay at companies forever. And I think a lot of HR programs are kind of built around like, we don't want anybody to leave, you know, and I think you want to do your very, very best to retain people, because absolutely the cost of turnover is really high. But look, you know, people want to do their thing and we want them to do their thing. And so I think when it's time to leave, you know, it's really helping be able to help people make that decision and make that transition.
Hey everyone, we hope that you're enjoying the conversation. Just want to tell you a bit more about IDOU. We're an online school where anyone can learn to solve anything creatively. If you're curious to go deeper into the topics of this podcast and learn more about IDEO's methods to scale purpose in your organization, collaborate on new experiments, and practice the skills of telling great stories, check out our Design for Change online course, taught by IDEO partner Brian Walker. You can find us at IDOU.com/D4C. Now, let's get back to the conversation.
Our community is a great source of inspiration and insight. Margot offered advice for Colleen, who wrote in with a specific cultural challenge. Colleen's passionate about creative problem solving, a diversity of perspectives, cultures that support authenticity, and all of these things. But she's not working in a company where these are yet priorities, and she's not officially in charge of culture. She's a business unit leader, and she'd like to see the company making more space for these types of behaviors.
I always go to the self first. So, you know, this is my thought is I think you need to start with your self-assessment. So for Colleen is to actually do some self-reflection. Where am I at with this culture? You know, because I know that sometimes over the course of my own career, there have been times when I've been like, this culture is not about, you know, innovation or, you know, and it could be like, I'm having a bad experience or, you know, my project didn't go correct, you know, and I'm not trying to minimize it, but I think it's always good to check in with yourself and do a reality check and really try to get to the root cause of like, how am I connected? What's my part in this? What's the evidence? You know, so we talked a little bit earlier about data, like do data collection here. It's like, it starts with the self because I think what I also see can happen is over time, I think sometimes we think a culture is one thing when it's actually not that thing, you know? So, I mean, I saw that happen. I think I saw that at Stitch Fix where I think people, you know, partnership could kind of become where people thought it was maybe all consensus and people agreeing or that you had to partner all the time. And it was like, no, that's actually not the case. Or at Lululemon, I think Lululemon in many ways was a very positive culture. And I think sometimes people could feel like if I raise an issue, that's not positive. And it was like, no, that's actually really good. So I think that there are those types of rubs. And I think it's really good to get in there and try to understand like, what is the disconnect that's happening?
Yeah.
Then the second thing I think is sort of what I'd call the responsibility and agency step. And so once you've identified this, I think it's really incumbent to start to broaden your circle and to be able to go outward and be able to talk to other people. You know, so Colleen's in a situation where she's a business leader, anybody could really be doing it. It's like, she should be talking to her manager, maybe her peers, you know, to other people who she trusts and respect. And hopefully it's a company where she can do that. You know, and because look, there are sometimes when people don't feel totally safe asking those kind of questions. And so I think she should be thinking about who are the people that she can talk to, where she can be very, very candid and kind of check in and say like, hey, here's what I'm noticing. And this is actually what I want. And then I think the third one is sort of assess and take action. And this is kind of an interesting one, you know, because in a perfect world, we hope that Colleen finds that there's some place to go with this, you know, that there is a desire and who knows, maybe things have gotten busy or other priorities have taken place or no one raised it. You know, I often say to people, if you're thinking something, it's incumbent upon you to share it because there are probably a lot of other people that are thinking it too. And so often I think we sort of go, it's not my place to say, or maybe I'm seeing something that no one else is seeing. And so Colleen's seeing something and sharing. So now she's assessing. And I think then she has to say, is this company willing to be the company that is aligned with what I want it to be, or is it not? You could test it by trying things, you know, by kind of saying like, hey, I am interested in the company doing more feedback or whatever. She could actually try to implement that on her team and share the results of that. I mean, that's like an obvious way, but I think the testing of it is going to be, is there sincerity and alignment with what people are saying and what the actions are, what they're doing.
When a senior leader is acting out of line with a stated company culture or values, that can be a strain on the entire organization. And Margot shared how to approach these situations.
So I think when a senior leader is out of alignment, it has to be addressed. And how does it get addressed? The feedback has to be given. The conversation has to happen. You know, conversations with the team, and it has to be known for people that it's okay and safe to be able to have those kind of conversations. So no one is immune from getting that feedback. And look, we all, you know, have those errors, and we owe it to be able to have the opportunity to get that feedback. And then I think the company has to decide what kind of action to take. People are watching things that you might take for granted as a senior leader, you're not even aware of. Get amplified when you're in a position that has so much visibility. And I know I can say I've made those mistakes, and I'm grateful for the feedback that I received so that I could actually be better.
Promoting and providing feedback on authenticity can be a difficult task. Margot says to go about it from a place of positive intent.
I think the worst could be like, that's not very authentic, Suzanne. Right. That would be the very worst manifestation, because who are we to judge the authenticity? And so, but I also think that broadly goes to any feedback. And those are things I've learned over time is you have to really reflect on the feedback you're giving someone. Mm-hmm. What's my intent here? And, you know, do I have a positive intention to actually make this person, you know, see it so that they could be better? You know, is it genuine? Is it grounded in trust? And so I think there's a lot that has to happen for feedback to flow. Mm-hmm. And people are, look, in life, I think people are sort of nervous about feedback because we've had uncomfortable experiences, whether it's in school or sports or at another company where feedback was really hard. You know, I mean, I feel it myself when I go, oh God, you know, you get that feeling someone wants to give you feedback. So I think what you want to be is specific about what did you observe? So what was the mm-hmm. thing that made you think that there was a lack of authenticity? So I can think of an example. I got promoted to be a director at Starbucks. And suddenly, somehow, I decided, and this probably related to the conformity piece, that I needed to completely change who I was. Hmm. And so I'm a very candid and direct person. And so sort of my team that was working with me felt like the next day, I suddenly wasn't as candid. And they felt like I was sort of keeping secrets. Hmm. And so I was so grateful that they were able to say to me, who is Margo? What it did is it made people have a lack of trust for me, or it didn't feel authentic and genuine to the person that I was. This is why it's really important, I think, when you're doing these values. We actually had a list of things that we wrote down at Stitch Fix. Here's what it is and here's what it's not. Because authenticity is something that can mean a lot of different things, just like integrity, in other words. So just really want to be careful about being able to be explicit for people so then it would be helpful for that to be able to give feedback.
When building an organizational culture, you have to plan for diversity and coexistence of multiple subcultures in one single place. We talked about the ways to keep your employees at the center of your culture.
I am very leery of this, categorizing people as millennials or, you know, and I've worked with a lot of different age groups, and I can honestly say that I can't sort of make a blanket statement to say all people who are between the ages of 25 and 30 are like this. You know, I think there are things people go through at different points in their lives, you know, that will raise maybe different issues for them. But I actually think it's really important to be coming to people sort of as they are. It kind of goes back to that authenticity. And so I also think with blending of the way the world is and social media and the workplace, there are concepts that are being brought from different groups. Like, I didn't grow up, you know, with iPads, and I love my iPad, and I didn't grow up with Instagram or Twitter. I love those things. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's, you know, it would be really dangerous for somebody to say to me as a person over 50, well, Margo's technologically challenged. She must be, because she's Gen whatever, you know, whatever I would be. Mm-hmm. And so I think those are things that kind of diminish people. Yeah. You know, you want to stay current with what are the trends and what's happening, you know, for people. Like, there are definitely going to be ways of things that we see in the world that matter more to people at different times. And then I think they spread, you know, I think, like, you know, work-life balance or different things, or like maybe being able to have a number of different experiences. My first job, I was at Starbucks for 15 years. I've never stayed at another company that long. I mean, it was great for 15 years, but I probably have picked up on the kind of, oh, it's cool to change, you know, and seeing more of that in the world.
When dealing with a merger, acquisition, or integrating a legacy culture into a new one, Margo says it's imperative to plan ahead.
So I think if it is a merger, I think you really have to have a plan for that. I mean, it sounds very obvious, but I think you have to say, like, okay, you know, how are we going to help people and invite people into what this culture is? Mm-hmm. And what's the transition plan for that? You also have to be very realistic to be able to, and I don't know if this is a thought that everybody has in a merger, but, you know, are these two going to go together? Mm-hmm. And even more so, are they going to enhance each other? So maybe there's something in the merger and the other culture that could actually be brought into this culture. But I think things like cultural shifts are very time consuming. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean they shouldn't be done, but I think that they're challenging. Mm-hmm. And I think sometimes I see that people will sort of say it and not do it because it's a very heavy pull. It's a very heavy pull. It's very possible, but it's going to be a heavy lift.
In the early days of a small company that's fast growing, finding the right amount of culture mining can be challenging. But Margo says it's easier to start early than to try to course correct later on.
It's never too early to consider what that is, because as I said, a culture is going to happen. Like, it's already happened. If there's like more than one person, even if there's one person, there's a culture that's actually being developed at that company. And so what are you going to do? You know, I don't think, you know, again, it's like staging it. But right now I'm working with a company that is at a very early stage. And the first thing that we're actually working on is write down what your employment philosophy is. What's special about working here at this particular place? And what is not what somebody could expect here? Yeah. How do you actually think about things? That's the place to start, because I think what people want to do, and I get it because it's pressing, is we need to hire people. We need to figure out how we're going to pay people. I think you have to do that other work first before you even start to think about how you're going to pay people, how you're going to hire people, because you'll find yourself in a bit of a mess and have to retract. Everything's fixable. Everything is recoverable. But I think to do that hygiene at the beginning is really important. You have to revisit it, but you know, you really want to think about those types of things. And what is it, what's really meaningful to you and as a company? So whatever you're putting into your brand strategy or your product design, you need to actually, I believe, put into what you're thinking about in terms of the company, the culture that you're creating around people. And I think it's becoming more and more important. I have, you know, great colleagues and who work in the venture capital firm, and they're looking for people that care about that. Yeah. Because I think if we're looking at some of the companies that have become, you know, successful and have had problems. Yeah. When you're facing those big problems at scale, it is challenging and it has a business impact. And absolutely. So it kind of goes back to this. This isn't the soft, fuzzy stuff. Yeah. This is hardcore, real stuff.
Creating a system of distributed leadership can help culture efforts take off. Margot talks about how to apply a cultural ambassador program.
At Stitch Fix, we had a culture club. That was great. You know, it was a really good way to pulse with people and help messaging and whatever. I think the only watch out for that is you don't want then the cultural ambassador to be like, oh, that's our person on culture. Yeah. So culture ambassador is going to really need to bring it forward and hold other people accountable for really creating the culture. Yeah.
Culture has an undoubted impact on the bottom line. We discussed how culture and values fit into strategic planning.
Some companies, I mean, the old days, people would do strategic planning like 5 to 10 years out. I don't think most people are doing that length of time anymore. I think like 2 to 3 years is relevant. And so I think you should always be, you know, maybe I guess when you're saying culture, like to me as part of strategic planning, you should be able to look at what's the people part of your strategic planning process. So, you know, really being able to dig in and however you're doing the, you know, what are our people goals in the period of time that we actually have in the strategy? What's the business strategy and what do we need to do from a people perspective to be able to deliver that strategy? And then you have a plan that is as robust as your other strategy. So to me, I kind of looked at you sort of like, yeah, it has to. And I don't think it should be like divorced and separate, you know, but I actually think that about all functions. I think you should really be coming together and doing an overall business strategy. And then functionally, you're really kind of looking at what are, you know, what are we doing in terms of being able to get on board and be able to help that.
Margo believes culture has a big impact on innovation. It can either hinder or enhance it. She talks about the possibilities you can create by giving people the room to be authentically themselves.
Yeah, I think we touched on it a little earlier about this conformity and authenticity. I think that that can really inhibit innovation. Honestly, I think cultures that have too much process kill innovation. And I really think that it can collapse under the weight of process, you know, and so people being able to have organizational fluidity. And I think, you know, the other part of, that I feel that really drives innovation is what you really want is for people to love what they're doing so much and to be so inspired that they're going to bring things forward that you would never dream of. So one of my favorite stories, and this was at Stitch Fix, where we had a data scientist who was working on something on the weekend because he just was so passionate about it. And it became what's called the style shuffle, which is if you have Stitch Fix, you play sort of a thumbs up, thumbs down. But that was not something that somebody said, go create that. It was like from the freedom of someone being able to create and create with other people and loving what they do. Like for me, that's the thing that we want to do. And that kind of operates outside of that strategic plan is being able to have those broad parameters where people can bring the things. I've always been surprised by what people bring. And I mean, surprised in a good way.
Margo continues to pull inspiration from a wide variety of different sources. I'm always impressed with all the things she's doing. We ended our discussion with a chat about what's been inspiring Margo most recently.
I recently went to writer's camp at Esalen, which is an amazing experience. So I was there at Esalen, which is in Big Sur. If you haven't gone, it's really an incredible, beautiful place. And it was a really great opportunity for me to be with other people who are writing and creating and hear amazing writers and to be inspired by that and to be challenged. And so the what I took from that, though, is I'll share one book that I'm really inspired by that is by a poet. His name is Ross Gay. And he wrote a book called The Book of Delights. So on his 40th birthday, he decided to write about a delight every day for 40 years. And it's beautiful and it's surprising and it's inspiring and very thought-provoking. Okay. So I'm very inspired by Ross Gay and The Book of Delights.
Thank you all for listening to this episode of the Creative Confidence Podcast. If you're interested in learning more about authenticity and purpose, I just wanted you to know that we have a course called The Power of Purpose, and that's one of our favorites, taught by Joe Brown, who's a director here at IDEO. This course pushes you to think about how you can connect and align with your own internal purpose and then scale that to motivate more people across an entire organization. Our purpose here at IDEOU is to scale creative confidence all around the world in the modern ways we work. And so we're happy that you're participating with us and exploring that together. We hope to see you again soon.